Hey, what's going on, Clipper people? It is me, William the Opinion Updike.
And I am Positive Chuck Mockler.
And we're your friendly neighborhood Clippers podcast.
Yes.
A couple of best friends and Clipper credentialed media folks bringing you Locked On Clippers 5 days a week.
5 days a week, 7 a.m. Come hang out. Big welcome to all the Utah Jazz fans who might be listening. Hope you're doing good.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of Jazz fans, Clippers are taking on Utah in the heart, the birthplace of Jazz. The home of Jazz.
Absolutely.
Of course, Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into what we need to do well to win that one, as well as what could go wrong. Give you a couple of key matchups to take a look at. And then in segment two, we're talking Thirsty Thursday. This every single week, we talk about who and what we want to see more of. We're going to be talking Paul George in this one. We're going to be talking some of what fans thought on Twitter they would like to see more of.
Yeah, they were kind of dead on, weirdly, with what Ty talked about in his presser on.
Definitely, definitely. We heard a lot of things about what they would like to see change in the rotation and just overall more physicality, which I think we've all kind of been begging for since the first round of the playoffs.
Since quarantine started.
So we'll get into all of that. And then in shavings, there's some updates on Staples capacity.
Yeah.
Which could change with all the June 15th stuff. So we'll update you on that. And then Celtics, eyeing former Clipper, Chauncey Billups.
Who knows?
All that and more coming up right about now. But first, got to let you know, Stat Hero, the first ever daily fantasy sports book that gives the player the advantage. Go to stathero.com/lockedon for 300% back on your first play.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Clippers vs. Jazz Game 2 Preview. Serge Ibaka, still doubtful. He was not in Utah, and then the Clippers ruled him out. So there must be some kind of injury report revolution happening within the Clippers. He's ruled out. Mike Conley, questionable. Doesn't seem like we're going to know his status until, I mean, honestly, probably tip-off, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a hamstring strain.
Well, the thing is, so I was thinking about this, and if you're at home, you know, you've already got the 1-0 advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just try to give him some more rest and see what the other guys can do in game two? Just because, like, dude,
that you got to travel that night.
And like, if it's not given enough time, that's essentially, I mean, knock on wood, because it would be terrible having him, but that's essentially, I mean, a playoff ending injury. Like, if it's re-aggravated.
Yeah, right, for sure. Yeah, if he's out for a week or something, that's a good call. Will be interesting to see. What we need to do well in this one. Both of our notes, our first notes on here, are about Donovan Mitchell. He's the biggest issue right now in terms of the Jazz offense. Do we so Ty Lue said in the Wednesday presser that he's more comfortable not switching versus Utah compared to what we saw in the Dallas series.
Yeah.
Do we just stick Kawhi on Mitchell and just say, I mean, the downhill speed got us? Like,
yeah, we were also, I mean, I thought it kind of a one of the defensive flaws was we weren't really battling through screens.
Yeah.
So I think, like, that's one thing that, you know, switching can kind of mitigate. So if they're sticking with one person, you know, you got to fully commit.
Oh yeah.
But I am down for
it's
that.
It's the big dog assignment, right?
Yes.
Like, it's like guard him.
Yeah.
Guard him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, it'll be spread out, but yeah, definitely. I mean, I like that. I think that's a great adjustment.
And like, the Jazz taking threes is going to happen.
It's what they do.
But we can't let them pick up where they left off in game one, which started with, to your next point.
We got to keep Donovan out of the paint.
Yep.
Look, I mean, he was solid shooting threes in game one. He hit 40% on 15 attempts, both above his season averages. I think he averages like around 9 a game and hits, you know, sub 40%. But he started that three-point shooting. Like, he started the first half bad. He was hitting like 25% on threes.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, he was getting to the paint. He's seeing his shot fall. And then, you know, he was much better in that second half. So I think keeping him out of the paint kind of alters his rhythm. It's definitely, you know, he's the most dangerous going downhill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he attempted around 12 of his 30 field goal attempts in the paint in game one.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to see that 10, if you can, like 10, sub 10.
And it's so weird because you don't want Donovan in the paint, but you don't want anyone else, you know, you want pretty much everyone else on the Jazz in the paint, right? You don't want them to shoot threes. Ideally, you're trying to defend their threes. So it's like, you got to stop Donovan, but then everyone else, you just got to try and run them off the 3-point line, which is what Ty Lue's talked about.
100%.
So that's where I think the straight just guard him 1v1 assignment, like you said, when you can, because he's going to be switching and stuff like that. I think that would help out a lot of stuff. What else do we got to do?
We got to win the boards. I thought we did a great job early in the game. I was really impressed with that. I think fatigue definitely set in the second half.
Yeah.
And they didn't like kill us on the boards. They out-rebounded us by about 10%, which is just one of those things in a game of margins, like as narrow as this, that can take you out of a game.
Yeah.
We did a really great job of offensive rebounding in that fourth quarter, kind of bouncing back from not being able to get shots to fall in the third.
Definitely.
We pulled down 7 team offensive rebounds in the fourth alone. Look, some of that is kind of hampered by shooting 40% from the floor.
Right.
But you're still giving yourself ultimately more opportunities. So
yeah, the hustle's there too. It shows that even the tire that they were hustling. The small ball lineup, mixed feelings.
We need to see more from it. It didn't get the job done in game one. And I think the biggest hamper was sort of Batum defensively.
He looked exhausted.
Yeah.
And that's I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's weird because like Gobert didn't get that many field goal attempts and the Jazz took 7 more threes than their season average.
Yeah.
So
the 3-point, the
53, it's insane.
I was not ready for that amount.
No, I knew they were going to take a lot, but 50, it was like, huh, okay. So these things are going to balance out, right? So I have to imagine we'll see a little more Gobert attempts or we won't and the Jazz are just going to put up 53s again. But this is kind of this is like difficult for the small ball lineup.
You think Ty Lue needs to make an adjustment to the starting lineup?
Man, I don't know.
I think.
No?
I think you got to give it one more game.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys are coming off of a game 7, and obviously the rest schedule isn't getting any better.
What if you just put Bevin for like a 4-minute stint to start?
I'm kind of with it. He's been pretty good on Mitchell.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that more in the second segment, but Ty Lue seems more inclined to do that. In terms of what could go wrong in this one, we got a really efficient night from a lot of guys in game one. Kennard 4-for-6 from 3, Reggie 3-of-5, Batum 2-of-4, Rondo and Boogie combined 2-of-4 from 3. So I'm hoping we can get, like, something that goes wrong is that we don't get as efficient from everybody. The flip side of this is that Morris hopefully won't go 1-for-9.
Yeah.
From 3 again. He legit, like, shoots either plus 50% or sub 20%.
I mean, well, that's how averages work, right? Like, if he averages if he averages like 43% or whatever.
But he's like what everyone kind of thinks Reggie is, I feel like.
What do you mean?
Like, Reggie will go like 3-for-6. Like, Morris literally is hot. There's no middle. There's no 33% shooting night from 3 from Morris. There's no there's not even a 40% shooting from 3 from Morris. It's either like, wow, 66% of his threes went in, or damn, he made 10% of his shots. Like, I just hope we get the good version of Morris's shooting.
Definitely.
Because we might not get as good of stuff from the bench guys. And that's a knock on the bench guys. It's just hard to do that 2 times in a row.
Yeah. Likewise, we got to keep them from getting into rhythm from 3.
Yes.
I mean, look.
You put up 50, you might find some rhythm here and there, but.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this could get out of hand pretty quick if we don't make them miss. Like, if
they missed 20 shots in a row.
Yeah. If they're seeing it fall early, I mean, it could be a very rough night. A plus side, we did a good job of keeping them out of the corners. And, you know, they just hit shots elsewhere.
Yes. I'm a little worried about turnovers just due to some unfamiliarity with tinkered lineups.
Yeah.
Just kind of a byproduct of trying a deeper bench and new things in a much different play scenario than the regular season.
Yeah.
With playoff basketball. We only turned the ball over 8 times in game one. It's been a point of emphasis from the team and pressers to take care of the ball, but you know, maybe some fatigue, maybe some new lineup stuff.
You just got to avoid the stupid ones, man.
Yeah.
They some steals in that game, you know, like.
But let's not be dummies with the ball.
Yeah.
What else? What's another thing that could go wrong?
If we deviate from our game plan, man.
Hey.
It felt like.
Stick to the plan, man.
I felt like we kind of got away from some of the things that made the first half so successful. We had great communication on defense. Like I said, we were rebounding great. We were keeping the ball moving and getting guys involved offensively. Then like when the rally started in the second half, it just kind of felt like everybody tightened up when the Jazz were going on a little run.
Yeah.
And it just kind of didn't
feel good.
It bounced back in the fourth, you know, like in the kind of closing minutes.
It came back. Yeah. Down double digits, no problem.
But yeah, you just got to trust in the game plan. You got to trust in what got us here.
Run what you brung.
Yes. In that first half, we had 13 assists on 20 made field goals. So like 65% of our made field goals were assisted. In wins for the season, we averaged around 60% of our made field goals assisted.
That checks out.
And in the second half, that assist rate on made field goals fell to 56%.
Okay. That's a substantial percentage.
Yeah.
It's lower. Key matchup I'm looking for in this game, Clippers versus the mid-range. Ty Lue said in Wednesday's presser that if Gobert is in drop coverage, a pull-up mid-range jumper is a good shot. So, two players I'm not worried about this about. Kawhi and Marcus Morris. Sure. Drop coverage, take the mid-range jumper. Paul George missed 8 of 9 shots from inside the arc in game 1, which we're going to talk about more in the next segment. But I don't want him pulling up in the mid-range. I want Paul George taking threes. If the space is even there for half a second if Gobert is in drop coverage, take the three, PG. He had three three-point attempts going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
In game 1. And that's like, that's insane.
Especially if the other team is going to be taking 53.
Yeah. So that's something to look for. And then this kind of goes to the other point. I think the biggest thing Clips fans are looking for is just Paul George versus aggression.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about more in the next segment.
It just, I mean, if he wants to break the, albeit a bit unfair, kind of stigma about him in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a big game to do it, right?
Definitely.
Down 1-0 on the road, very hostile Utah Jazz environment.
Yeah.
Could be a big game. What's your prediction for this game?
I don't know. I mean, this one, like, the last game was great game.
It
was,
I'm so unsure.
So it's just so difficult because it was a great game, but you have, like, Utah shot below their season average.
It was like a beta test of a game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't quite what you thought it would be.
Yeah.
And there was there's some bugs, some wonky stuff, but, I mean, I trust in Ty Lue. He made adjustments before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll know early on how this one is going. Like, if we can kind of keep them from getting in rhythm early, I think we could put away the win.
We got to split it.
Got to split it.
Coming up, we're talking Thirsty Thursday. More talk about Paul George. More talk about Terrence Mann. More talk about Pat Bev. But first, hey, we talked about it off top. Talking about Stat Hero. Did you know that 85% of people who play daily fantasy sports lose? That checks out. Is it really that surprising? No. The game is rigged against you. You're playing against thousands of other lineups, not to mention experts who have more tools and more time. You don't stand a chance.
Oof.
But we're introducing Stat Hero. It's the first ever daily fantasy sports book that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works. Stat Hero shows you their lineups and dares you to beat them. It's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup. You name your stakes. Winner take all. You have the advantage. Stat Hero is showing you the lineups ahead of time. No one else does that. You're in total control. Stat Hero's DFS, the way it was meant to be done. One-on-one. Play Stat Hero now and change the odds in your favor. Go to stathero.com/lockedon. Sign up for free. And right now you can get 3 times back on your first play.
Whoa.
Increíble. They're going to give you 300% match. That's unheard of. Go to stathero.com/lockedon. Stathero.com/lockedon. And after you've done that, what should you eat?
If you're hungry from being such a hero, you got to check out Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market, and the new and improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. It comes in 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors for those with allergies. The 6 new flavors include caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Look, the bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't want to fight with your protein bar.
No way.
But the number one thing is that Built Bars are healthy. Built Bars are great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, which makes them great for the keto diet.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we have a very special offer for our listeners.
What?
For a limited time, you can get a free cooler with purchase.
A limited drop?
Very limited drop. Very exclusive. This is only while supplies last, so you're going to want to get on it. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
All right. Welcome to Thirsty Thursday. Hope everyone's having an ice cold clobe.
Yeah.
I guess it's 7 a.m. some of you are listening to this, so maybe pace yourself, but whatever. All right, we were talking aggressive Paul George in the last segment. We're talking about it again right now. He had a great fourth quarter in game one, which was awesome, right? But over half of his three-point attempts came in that quarter.
Yeah.
Which is not good.
And I feel like we need to maybe asterisk aggressive because I felt like some of his drives to the paint were really inefficient. Like he was going straight at Gobert's chest.
Well, they were definitely inefficient. He didn't score a single point in the paint.
Yeah, which was rough to see. But yeah, I think he's just got to have some more confidence in the shot early.
Like he knows it's there. That's what's so frustrating is I'm like, dude, like we know what's there. Like how are you not shooting more threes?
Yeah. Definitely, definitely.
Do you think they try and make it a point early to just run a couple sets for him?
I don't see why not, you know?
Why not? Why not have the first bucket instead of Marcus Morris being a PG three-point attempt?
Yeah. No, I think that tone. I think that makes sense. I mean, he's covered a little harder than, you know, than Mook, which makes it a little bit harder.
Yes,
but
fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, get him in motion, you know, and hopefully he can just get in rhythm early, man. Because there's also the chance that it just backfires.
That's a very good point, actually. Damn, that is a very good point. Is that we just feed Paul George and it's like, oh, he doesn't have it tonight. and then, yeah, that's happened. We've seen Kawhi has, not that if you were a rational person, there was any doubt that he's an elite basketball player.
Yeah.
First round. Against Dallas, Kawhi put to bed any lunatic ideas that he wasn't going to be effective in the playoffs this year.
That game six is, that's an all-time.
It's one of the best games of basketball that single person.
That's an all-time playoff performance.
Yeah, that will go down in Clippers lore. It has to. Paul George is still waiting on that.
Very true, man.
Right? Like,
I don't even think he's cracked 25 yet in these playoffs.
I don't think he has. There's a very mean graphic that ESPN put up about players who've shot under 25%. I'm not going to repeat it, but let's just say Paul George is on the list. You don't want to see him there. And we know what he can do.
Yeah.
Everyone, his opponents know what he can do.
Yeah.
The Jazz crowd is going to be on him again, but I hope he can get hot early.
Yeah, come on, man. Get yourself back to a conference final.
Believe in yourself.
Yeah.
It's Paul George.
It's been like, 6 years?
Yeah. Do you, buddy. Clippers fans weighed in on Twitter on what they wanted to see more of. A common theme was more Terrence Mann.
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing some more Mann defensively.
Yes.
His
role is interesting, right? Because like another very clear theme was less Rondo, which I'm kind of on board with. But
he's been falling apart in the playoffs.
He's been bad. But you can't like swap Mann for Rondo, right? Their roles are completely different.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Rondo's there to direct traffic. Mann is there to...
And he's still leading the team in assists.
Mann is there to be a slasher and be a nuisance on the boards and be able to help defend 1 through 5. So, like, kind of what is Mann's role expanded? Like, if you take Rondo's minutes away, who else are we putting out there with Mann to help the ball movement?
I mean, I think it's the small ball starters plus Mann.
It's a good call.
I think that, I mean, that's what makes the most sense to me. But if, you know... I think, though, that he could also be really effective in a second unit lineup, like defensively on Clarkson. I mean, he's got a little bit more size.
We got to make it – I didn't say this in the preview. We got to make it uncomfortable for Clarkson on the perimeter. He only made threes last game. Literally, he only made threes.
Definitely.
So we got to make it uncomfortable for him.
Yeah, you got to make it more uncomfortable for sure to try to get him out of rhythm. But also, I mean, he's like a 34% shooter, you know, like
for sure
in playing the margins game.
You're kind of fine. Like, if
I think you live
advantage
with that versus, I guess, him like getting to the rim.
That's a good call. More Mann, less Rajon Rondo, and then more Pat Bev and more Boogie. And all of these people put these things.
Man, I don't know about this. When we were talking at half and Chuck was like really pumped on running an 11-man rotation, I just thought, but why?
We needed it. Guys were dead out there.
Yeah. But it's true. So it's true. In the fatigue, for sure. And maybe...
Oh, purely from a fatigue standpoint is why it's a good call.
And maybe it is a bigger factor with only one day in between games.
Yeah.
I just, like, I'm concerned about replicating that type of production that we got in one half in one game.
Agreed. I think it's kind of a sobering thing to actually look at how many minutes Boogie played.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah.
He played 359.
And that's, like, how much Boogie you should be playing in the playoffs.
Right. So... A lot of fans are like, we want more Pat Bev and more
Pat Bev for sure.
Yeah. And then Ty Lue in Wednesday's presser after this said he liked what he saw from Pat Bev and Boogie Cousins in game one and says we'll see more of them in this series.
I mean, I like
the- Pat Bev, honestly, Pat Bev and Terrence Mann, and then you move everyone else down a position, you play small.
Yeah.
Mook at the five, PG at the three, Kawhi at the four, however you want to do it. And then Bev and Mann, I don't know. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bit cumbersome. I'm not going to pretend like it's a smooth, like, ball movement lineup, but the defense is there.
The defense is there. Yeah.
The Boogie minutes, I think it's got to stay around, like, 7.5 at the most.
I mean, it's just tough because, like, in non-Gobert minutes, I just feel like it makes the most sense to me to have Zoo out there.
Right.
But Ty Lue has gone against what I've thought made the most sense, and he's been right. So, if it's more Boogie, then I guess it's more Boogie.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, hey, he was plus six, you know. I mean, Rajon getting 28 minutes is absolutely insane. Terrence Mann had 8. Like, those got to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bev so played I think, 6.
Reggie, I guess it's just 17? Tough with the staggering of Gobert and Mitchell, right? Because
sure.
Terrence Mann, I mean, I think he'd be great in the Clarkson only minutes, but if Gobert's out there, I feel like that severely limits what he's able to do offensively.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
So yeah, I don't know.
Because they're not going to
They've really figured out that staggering, and it's pretty good.
Well, in the Jazz, like you talked about, not like man not figuring out offensively. The Jazz don't care that Rondo shoots.
Nope.
And they won't care if man shoots. That's not a discredit towards man, but if you're the Jazz, you're like, fine. We'll let Terrence Mann hit those threes.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So it's going to be interesting. And then final point, I think we're both thirsty for this. Let's talk physicality.
Yes.
Like... The first round, we were all pretty disappointed.
Yeah, I think game three, it picked up a little bit.
Definitely.
And then it kind of ebbed and flowed, which, you know, makes sense. It's very physical, very taxing playoff basketball. But
yeah,
I would like to see that tone set earlier.
And I think the refs really messed this up for both teams
in game one.
I think that,
yeah, you're 100% correct. That absolutely inhibited it.
Like, Kawhi had 3 fouls, and I was just like, well, what the shit?
It seemed like you were getting loose ball fouls for boxing out, so.
Straight up, yeah. And then they had the last 2-minute report where there was an arbitrary call that was wrong that no one was even complaining about, that they're like, well, we got this one wrong. And it's like, no one gives a shit about that one.
Did it say anything about the Ingles foul?
No.
Of course.
This goes to a larger point that we've talked about. Playoff referees, it's like umpires in baseball in the postseason. It's like, you know, refs at the World Cup. They're the good referees of the season, right? Like, they don't pick any referee to ref in the postseason. You have to actually be good. The issue with that is that we still get these crews where
it's
like...
Is it good or is it seniority?
I think it's good. It has to be good. Because, like, but you just can't have these crews where it's like, oh, wow, this team's 7-0 when this person refs, and the other team is 0-6 when they've had them. Like, that shouldn't even be a stat that you can put out in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because there's refs that don't have those stats.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Even optically.
If there is an alternative... Why aren't you kind of
And this is for both sides. I don't care if it was the Clippers being 0-8 or 8-0, whatever. It's not good for the game.
Yeah.
And it just raises those questions where even if you're the league, I just don't understand it.
Are some of these, though, like, I Are some of these, though, just things we're getting caught up on as fans?
Absolutely.
Because, I feel like,
wow, way to throw reality in my face.
I mean, but no, seriously, it's completely unrealistic to expect every ref to have a 500 record against
right.
every team.
But an 0-for record or an undefeated record.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is almost like just as an anomaly.
Yeah.
And I think it's different, too, because, personally, when I think of refs, it's that thing, right? In an umpire, there's very clearly one very important umpire. And
yeah.
It's the guy calling balls and strikes.
Yeah.
Where the NBA, it's a little more, you know what I mean? It's more evenly dispersed.
They still have designations, though.
They do. But it's still a little more evenly dispersed in how it, truly affects the game, right?
Totally.
But I just wish we'd have a little more. I don't want to see any more ref stats tweets.
Yeah.
No disrespect to ref stats. We need you, but...
I thought that it really, the biggest thing is it was bad for both sides, but the biggest thing is it just inhibits the game. And that's not, that's not the
think
point
of the neutral fan.
Basketball.
Yeah. Won't somebody think of the neutral fan? Coming up, we're going to be talking Clippers capacity at Staples if things go the right way. And then Chauncey Billups may be coaching the Celtics. But first, we got to give a shout out to a nicotine company.
Ooh.
A very smart nicotine company, Lucy Nicotine. Was founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers. Hey, they can do it all over there. They can read, they can smoke. They were all looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. No pun intended. Researched and developed for 3 years. Wow. To be made for people, not patients, Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. One of those is a bit of a curveball. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, cherry, ice, citrus, and mint. Those all make sense. Lucy lozenges and gums are FSA and HSA eligible, so you can use your FSA cards to purchase Lucy now. Duh. And it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym. Just chew on that nicotine. It's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes. Unplug your vape. Throw out your dip. Get rid of the snooze. Get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. That's a month supply of gum all at once. It's so simple, and you don't have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. Lucy lozenges and gums are also FSA and HSA eligible, so you can spend pre-tax dollars on these lozenges and gums. Locked On NBA Network listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get 20% off all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. Wouldn't it be unbelievable if you couldn't get a discount on those? That's lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer, and I enjoy giving this disclaimer. I have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co, and be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA.
All right, we're nicotined up.
I'm buzzing.
Shaving.
I'm running around in circles with a fob mic right now.
All right, so with the restrictions in California being lifted around June 15th, fans might get full capacity at Staples.
Let's hope so.
No more cardboard cutouts.
Man, the thing with the cardboard cutouts is look, I love the sentiment.
I think it's.
I'd love to have one.
I think it's fun for the regular season. Playoffs, come on, man.
The issue is there's a gloss on the cardboards themselves.
They don't light
They reflect light.
Yeah, they don't light well.
It's like we're looking at ethereal beings in the stands. They just do a matte, a soft cover on it. Due to scheduling, the Clippers would have to take this to 6 games.
Yeah,
if this were to happen, which, talk about a hyped up crowd.
Yeah.
Game 6, Staples Center, all those Clips fans been cooped up.
You think it goes less than 6?
No.
I don't see any.
Sure as hell hope not. Based on how the first game went.
Yeah.
And this brings us to kind of the larger, we haven't really talked about this. We didn't talk about this in the recap, but man, you got to give credit to those Utah fans. That atmosphere, although sometimes quite literally hateful.
Yeah.
Very loud.
I mean, I don't want to touch on that part. I think we've...
I'm just stating facts.
It's very factual.
That's all we're going to say.
It's very factual. I don't even want to begin to dissect the toxicity of the fan interaction.
Oh, I hope it's fine.
but it's kind of interesting because it was apparent on the broadcast how much louder it was. And it's I
then the first round it was like, dude, Dallas, it's like, man, that's a basketball crowd.
Yeah. I mean it's kind of interesting too. I always forget to sort of contextualize that Utah Stadium is built only for basketball.
Right.
So the
not a whole lot else going on in Utah.
Yeah. Stands are
professional sports.
The stands are a little bit closer. The way that it's like the bleachers or whatever are angled.
Yeah.
I think it amplifies that.
They had a sound scientist.
It's definitely noticeable. I don't know if it's EMP status, but.
Oh, I don't know if it's EMP status, but it's loud as hell. How much do we think it's affecting the Clips?
I think from what we've seen so far, the crowd only seems to positively affect the Clips.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, isn't this our first road loss in the playoffs?
Well, and we have vets too, right?
Yeah.
Like we have veteran guys. We're not, if this was a younger team, I think I would be a little more like, because it also like, just, I don't care who the team is. When you're going from Staples that has 5,000 people or whatever, then you go to Dallas and it's like not as intensive an atmosphere. And then you go to Utah, that's a big change.
For sure.
Like we talked about how in game one they were playing pretty quick to start, which I think was maybe an adrenaline thing.
Yeah.
Like the crowd was pretty damn hyped up.
I mean, the other thing too with the road games from the first series is, I mean, it sucks that we weren't able to, you know, get a win until like the very last game at home, but
right. We
did have two feel out games before going on the road.
Yeah.
Which,
good call.
I mean, it's like a completely different, rotation and matchup situation. Being in a hostile environment.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. But we got to give credit to the Jazz crowd. Very loud.
Good yeah. Feel.
What do we think about Chauncey Billups on the Celtics list of coaching candidates? I want Chauncey to do nothing but succeed.
Absolutely. I mean, he's been tied to like so many NBA jobs and it kind of hasn't
GM,
come
head coach.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean... I just don't know if he's set up in a winning position.
Oh, they're doing well. He would be in a situation that a lot of black head coaches find themselves in.
Yes.
Like it's like I saw a tweet that was so funny that was like all of these GMs want Nate McMillan to take their really bad team to the conference finals.
Totally.
And then they're mad at, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's like black coaches tend to be put in situations where you're not going to succeed. And it's like, well, we got to get a new coach. And it's like, no, there's nothing here. Like, Nate McMillan switched teams and now the Hawks are like, good. And I don't want Chauncey Billups to fall victim to what kind of the cycle a lot of the times is in the NBA.
I just feel like it's really tough. And I'm sure he'd be up for the challenge, but like...
Oh, absolutely.
It's really tough being in such a critical market like that where... Coaching to me isn't really it's certainly not the only thing holding that Celtics... team back right now.
And, for sure.
And, you know, next year with full health, maybe it'll be a little bit better. They had stretches, with a rookie point guard playing,
super
significant
good call.
Minutes in the lineup.
That's a very, good point.
They were hit super hard by COVID. Like, there's a lot of stuff. So, I mean, like, contextually, it could maybe bounce back.
But for a first-time head coach?
It doesn't seem...
I don't know what scenario you'd like to go into as a first-time head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, being able to coach Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, not bad.
Yeah. Pretty no, absolutely. Tight.
But it's going to be interesting. I hope he goes somewhere he can succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that roster has issues. I don't know.
Apparently, they tried to trade... Farbaugh had a great piece today about how, you know, the Celtics tried to trade Kemba, and he kind of wants out now because they tried to trade him earlier, and he's just like, "This, what are we doing here?" Like,
yeah. Makes sense, man. Who's taking on that contract?
I don't know. Man, I don't want him to coach in Boston. I just don't.
It just kind of seems like a mess right now. So
it really does. Like, your coach wasn't good enough, so you promoted him to the guy who runs the whole personnel. So that's a thing.
I love your hatred for Brad Stevens.
I don't. I think
it's a
he gets a pass. I think he gets a pass. Oh, we'll go into it on Locked On Hate, where Will and I talk about everything we hate.
Locked On Grievances. It's not hate.
Locked On Grievances would be a fun show.
Yeah.
What if we did Locked On Grievances? If you want to hear Locked On Grievances, tweet at the Locked On NBA Network, where we bring other hosts on the Locked On Network on, prominent reporters, and they talk about their grievances with the specific sport or something. Like your pet peeves, basically.
Yeah.
One of my pet peeves, Brad Stevens, no. How the NBA is the only sport that doesn't have to have a tip-off time.
It's absurd.
Every other sport is like, oh, first pitch, 7:10, kickoff, 1:25.
Yeah.
The NBA is like, we're hanging out for about 15, see what the vibe is, get a couple fireworks in. Lockdown Grievances would be fun.
Oh, yeah. It'd be a great time.
It'd be a good time. Let us know if you want to see Lockdown Grievances. Whew. I know we sounded pretty jovial this episode, but I'm a little stressed for game two.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like once again, we didn't get the best sample size maybe in game one.
Right. We got a wonky one. Friday's episode, recap, Clippers versus Jazz game two. Let's go Clips. Let's tie this thing up.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
bring it back to Staples.
That'd be huge.
For a good time. Little game three preview, because that does happen on Saturday. We do not work on Saturdays for this network. And then Love, Marry, Quarantine. That's going to be a fun one. We're going to end on a fun note, no matter what happens. Will, where can people pay too much money in skywriting fees to tell the masses to listen to our podcast?
You could check us out on iTunes or the podcast app. We're also on Google Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on Deezer. We're on Amazon Music.
Damn.
And you can always tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Clippers. It works. It's a great time. As we mentioned up top, we do come at you Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Pacific. We'd love to have you listen.
We absolutely would. I have been Positive Chuck Wachler.
And I am William the Opinion Updike. We appreciate you.